And lastly for Thursday, the East Coast Islands, Dub Tide, Dan Vaughn Band, and Rhinus at Sullivan Hall, 7:30 p.m. Okay, WSB.FM is where you can find us. Seen at WSB.FM for information on Concert Billboard. Thanks, everybody, for your support in 2008. And for 2009, let's have everyone prove that Mr. Dylan is wrong, that everything is not broken. Thanks, everybody.
And a note to that Concert Billboard, sad news, our own Sam Taylor has passed away. So the concert scheduled for tomorrow night at Barbecue will actually be more of a tribute to the late, great Sam Taylor. It's 6:06. Wow, 6:06. Thank you, Spiny. We're running pretty late here. Time on WUSB Stony Brook for Off the Wall. And the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And, yeah, we actually had a choice whether or not to play the Concert Billboard because of the sad news about Sam Taylor. But, you know, I kind of realized that he would want us to play a listing of all the concerts taking place in the area and not simply shelve the whole thing because one of them is now inaccurate. And, yeah, he was one of the biggest promoters, biggest reasons for live music in the area. And also host of Blues Show. I believe it was on Friday mornings. Never up on Friday mornings. So I wasn't actually someone who could listen to that live, but just proof of one of the many amazing people that walk through the doors here. Well, I've walked through the doors here against the advice of all kinds of people, medical people, religious leaders, all sorts of people like that, saying that, Emmanuel, you're far too sick to come back to the station. Yes, I got sick, okay, coming back from Europe in the last week or so. Boy, I gotta tell you, you know, I had a great time over there. I was just over there for a week, maybe 10 days, in Amsterdam first, and then over to Germany for New Year's. But when I travel, I tend to do crazy things, and I tend to kind of push myself sometimes. I'm not even sure this is related to that. This might be something completely unrelated. But, yeah, I did push myself quite a bit. See, what happened was, you might have heard on Off the Hook, we had a bit of a celebration on New Year's Eve. Actually, it was New Year's Day when we talked to people in New York, because Berlin is 6 hours ahead. So it was about 1 o'clock in the morning on January 1st. We were blowing up things on the roof. That sounds ominous, I know, but actually we were just simply lighting firecrackers on the roof. That sounds ominous too. I know, this is America. Everything sounds ominous. Well, this is what people do, okay? Over in Europe, they light firecrackers on New Year's Day and New Year's Eve. Everybody has a great time. It's a lot of fun. I ought to try it sometime. In fact, I used to try it a lot when I was a kid, when we weren't so scared back then. And actually, I was—I just remember this too. I was on my way to the airport on the 2nd. I left on January 2nd, and I was just going through my pockets. I was actually waiting for the bus that went to the airport, and lo and behold, inside my pocket were all these firecrackers that I hadn't used. I could just imagine what that would have been like, accidentally getting onto an airplane with a bunch of gunpowder in your pocket. Probably wouldn't have. Well, then again, I would be going through German security, so they might understand. But what if I had made it all the way onto the airplane? Then I don't think they would have understood quite as much. And, you know, for some reason you can bring lighters onto airplanes. That's considered okay. It's okay to be able to create fire on an airplane. I don't know why. All airplane flights are non-smoking, are they not? And you could certainly light something on fire, which would not be good. You ever notice that on airplanes? They always say, this is a non-smoking flight. Well, okay, if you're going to say this is a non-smoking flight, that implies that there are smoking flights someplace. Where are those smoking flights? I'd like to know. You know, why not simply say smoking is banned while flying? Unless I'm missing something. Are there smoking flights? It's just the way they say it every time makes me think that this is just one category of flight. Like I've said before, I would like to have child-free flights. That would be nice. Can they arrange that? I'd pay extra. I'd pay extra for a little bit more foot room, you know? It's barbaric what they do to people. It really is. On airplanes, it's barbaric. The way you have to get all scrunched up. I can't even use my laptop while I'm flying because invariably the person in front of me is reclining, and it's just simply physically impossible to place the laptop on the little table tray they put in front of you and be able to actually use your hands at the same time. It can't be done. Can't be done. I actually had an extra seat on the way back because the person next to me decided to move to a row with a lot of chairs or something. I don't know exactly what the deal was there, but I had an extra seat. It was great. It was amazing. I mean, it wasn't amazing. It was about the same as having a regular chair someplace else, but still. I know people are probably thinking I'm like 400 pounds or something like that. No, that's not the case at all. Normal size, you know. It's just a question of what they do to people on these cargo containers. Then they always make you walk through business class and sometimes first class where they have all this space and all kinds of luxury going on. They make you walk through that on the way out so that you can silently vow to yourself, next time I'm going to travel with class and pay four times the price. Okay, you know what? I got way off topic there. I'm sorry. This is what's going to be happening today because my mind is still a little spacey because I've been, as I mentioned, I was sick. And I still am, in fact, I think. But somehow I got onto the airplane when I was just talking about being at the bus stop going to the airplane with the fireworks in my pocket. And actually, that wasn't even what I was talking about. I was talking about New Year's Eve where we were blowing up fireworks and firecrackers on top of the roof or off the hook. So basically what that leads into is the fact that afterwards we were all hanging out at this party someplace in Berlin, and that's a great thing about Berlin, there's always a party going on someplace. But eventually and sadly they all come to an end. And in my case, it was particularly sad because I had no place to go. What happens on New Year's, and this happens everywhere, is that prices for things skyrocket, things being hotel rooms. So normally, the cheap place I was staying was fantastically expensive, like on the order of several $100s. And that just, to me, is not worth it. It's not worth it for the few hours of sleep I might get on that particular night. So the better thing for me to do, and this is actually the second year in a row that I did this, is simply to kill time. Kill time by walking around the city and finding things to do. And simply checking in as early as you can the next day. So, in actuality, you're just wandering around for a few hours. Well, you know, that's all fine and good when you get a good night's sleep the night before, which I did not. For some reason, I was only able to get a couple of hours sleep the night before, and the night before that wasn't that great either, because this whole thing was precipitated by the 25th annual Chaos Communication Congress, which basically is a bunch of German hackers getting together and taking over a space legally and having all kinds of talks and projects ongoing. And this happens every year. I'll promote next year's now so that people can start getting their plans in order. December 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. 4 days between Christmas and New Year's. It's a great way to spend that particular time of the year. And it happens in Berlin, and it's a ton of fun. But you don't get very much sleep. That's the thing. When you're hanging out with all these people and going to all these parties and having all this fun, sleep sort of gets put on the back burner. So I was already in sort of a zombified state, you know, when I was at this party, and I knew that I had to kill time until at least 2 o'clock the next afternoon. And that was when my hotel room would open up. So I had to kind of walk around and do all sorts of things. I tried to get other people to stay up too, but, you know, people are only human and there's only so much they can do. I don't know what that makes me exactly, just kind of crazy, I suppose. But I continued walking around the city, and the great thing about the city is that you can simply hop on trains and buses and trams, and nobody asked to check your ticket constantly. I had a ticket, I had a day pass, in fact, but it just speeds things up a lot when you can just simply hop onto a train and go someplace and check out a particular part of town. So I did a lot of that. I did a lot of jumping back and forth, going from one train station to another, one part of town to another. Said, you know, I'd like to get an espresso in this particular part of town. That kills half an hour. Just hop on the train, get off the train, walk around, get what you want to get back on the train, go someplace else, and keep repeating. Well, I also went back to Hauptbahnhof, which is the main train station, the newest station in Berlin. Last year, if you recall, I wandered around for a couple of hours looking for missing train tracks. I wanted to see if there had been any update on that particular system. Now, as I recall, there was a soon-to-be-built U-Bahn line called the U-55. U-Bahn being one of the subway systems. They have actually two, U-Bahn and S-Bahn. S-Bahn is more of a suburban type of line. U-Bahn is more of an underground type line, although they do go above ground, too. And for some reason, in this particular train station, they had tracks 1 through 8, and then tracks 11 through 16. So my question at the time was, where's track 9 and 10? And I spent hours wandering around trying to find it. And I eventually found an area that seemed to be under construction and that could feasibly hold two more tracks. And I went back there, and they're still there, still under construction, has not been finished. But, and this makes things even more complicated, I found in that train station a true-to-life model of the entire station. This is something that would be forbidden here because it would be a security problem. But yes, this particular model replicated everything in the station, all the platforms, all the tracks. And if you looked, you'd see that there were tracks that did not have platforms that were behind the wall. They actually had the missing tracks as part of this model. It was amazing. But what made it even crazier was the fact that instead of two tracks, there were four. There were four missing tracks. Now, I'm really going crazy because they have tracks 1 through 8 labeled. They have tracks 11 through 16 labeled. 9 and 10 are the missing tracks, so what are they going to call the other two tracks? Yeah, you can see. This drove me crazy for a while. But I found myself wandering around. It was about maybe 9 o'clock in the morning, getting pretty tired, even with the espresso. I was just sort of figuring out, how am I going to kill another 5 hours or so? I went to the Berlin Zoo, something I've always wanted to do. In fact, the train station, the western train station, when the city was divided, East Berlin, West Berlin, the western station was known as Zoological Gardens. In fact, it still is, but that was the station that most of the trains stopped at when coming from the western part of Germany, from West Germany. And the eastern station was known as Ostbahnhof, or the eastern train station. That's still there, too. So I went over to that station. I went to the zoo. It was open. There were some people walking around. It was starting to snow. It was really great. It was a fantastic way to spend a bunch of hours. I figured I'd just sort of walk around and quickly take in the sights and leave. But it was so fascinating, so interesting looking at this place, and so vast and complicated that I was easily able to spend 4 or 5 hours just walking around, staring at it all. And I'm not a big fan of zoos because I'm not a big fan of animals in captivity, but as far as zoos go, this one seemed to treat animals fairly okay. They seem to have a good amount of space. They seem to be fairly mentally okay. And I even saw some of the staff people preparing food for the animals. It was really kind of weird. You see these guys dressed up kind of like chefs, and they have all this greenery, and they have bananas and coconuts, and they're chopping things up and putting them into plates, and they're feeding the animals. But they're doing it in full view. So that was interesting to see. they have basically representation from all parts of the world. You see kangaroos there, you see lions, you see tigers, you see all sorts of things. But I think what fascinated me the most, and they also have that little baby polar bear. This was a big deal in Germany. A polar bear was apparently given to the zoo, and everybody was fawning over this this creature. He's grown up a bit now. He's a bit bigger, but apparently there's a fight going on between Berlin and another city that claims ownership of the polar bear. So basically, he attracts a lot of people, all taking pictures and things like that. The thing though that fascinated me the most was the last part I stopped in, the aquarium. And that just was so amazing to me because it was so alien. Have you ever looked at saltwater fish? You see how crazy some of them can look. How from another planet these creatures seem to be from. Things that are plants are actually animals. Things that look like animals are actually plants. And all of this exists on our Earth. Yeah, a little jellyfish, squid-looking creatures that have all kinds of tentacles and float around and really give you nightmares in the days following. But there was one creature in particular that I cannot get out of my head. And I don't even know how to describe this. I've tried to describe this to several people. I took a video of it, in fact. Basically, I've looked on the internet. I've tried to describe it on the internet, but I've so far failed to actually find these creatures. So I hope that off-the-wall listeners might know what I'm talking about. There are these kind of worm-like creatures. They look like worms, all right? Except the bottom of the worm was sticking in the sand. And these guys were just kind of sticking up out of the sand, and it looked like they were trying to reach out to anything that was passing by. They seemed eager to engage in some kind of a dialogue of some sort. And occasionally they would simply pull back into the sand, but they would never actually come out of the sand. Just their heads and however much of their bodies would be sticking out, and then they'd pull back and they'd come out a little bit, but they'd never actually fully come out. And it made me wonder, is there some big animal they're attached to? Are these actually just tentacles with mouths or something like that? It looked like something so out of any science fiction story that I've seen or read about. It just did not seem realistic. I never heard of anything like this. Now, are they eels? Are they worms? Are they some kind of fish? Are they some kind of reptile? I don't know, because it was all in German, and I couldn't even see a label for this particular display. And I've tried to describe it to Google. I've tried to describe it to Wikipedia. I've tried to describe it to human beings. And I've even shown the video, and nobody knows what these creatures are. So I'm hoping that somebody will write into otw@2600.com and tell me what I saw in the Berlin Zoo Aquarium. If you find yourself in Berlin, that's definitely worth wandering around. I've been there so many times since the first time I went there 20 years ago, and I've never gone to that place before, so glad I did. But wandering around for that amount of time, I think, really put a strain on me, because I was feeling all these aches and pains the next day when I finally did wake up. Actually, I slept about, probably about 15 hours the next day. See, my plan was this. My plan was to do that, and I knew that by completely taxing my system, that I would be waking up at a bizarre time. And since the flight I could get for a really good price was early in the morning, that was my opportunity to change my hours and wake up early in the morning. And it worked like a charm. I woke up at, I think, 6 a.m. on my own and was able to walk to that bus, discover that I had fireworks in my pocket, leave the fireworks at the bus stop, knowing that I would probably make some kid really happy when he found them. See, if I did that in this country, they would shut down the bus stop, they would cordon off the entire street, and it would be on the news. That's what I love about other countries, different customs. I can leave gunpowder and fireworks and things like that at a bus stop, and it's a good thing. So then I had to make my way through the airport and get on an 8.5-hour flight home, and arrive at around noon, even though I've been traveling for 8.5 hours because of the time difference, and then continue to have a full day on Friday and make it to the 2600 meeting since it was the first Friday of the month. So another sort of double day. I think all of that kind of just added up and got my system really pissed off at my brain. And that's basically aches and pains turned into coughs and fevers and all kinds of fun things like that. And delirium set in soon afterwards, and here I am, presumably at the end of it all. Oh, and I also got stopped and interrogated by U.S. Customs. It's amazing. You know, I go through all of this traveling, and it's always when I come back to this country that I got to deal with the crap, you know? And it's insane because you're in the country. You're a citizen of this country. You know, you belong here. Why is it they feel the need to go through all of your bags and ask you all these questions and put you through hell when you're back here? Okay, you think I'm smuggling drugs. Is that what you think? Okay, get one of the drug dogs, have him sniff me, and I'll be clear. What's the reason for the interrogation? What I do for a living? What kinds of things do I write? Who do I speak to? Who do I know? What's my philosophy on various things? Why is that necessary? I'm here already. I've already been screened in Germany. I don't have any weapons. They actually asked, do you have any weapons on you? Do you have any sharp objects? You know, if I did, how in God's name would I have gotten onto the airplane? Seriously, it doesn't make any sense. They do these things to, I guess, intimidate you or to put you in your place or something like that. And, you know, at that stage, I was so tired that I just didn't have any strength to be angry. I just sort of sat back and let it all unfold. Anyway, I'll probably talk more about this tomorrow night on Off the Hook, because there are some very interesting things that happened that I'd like to get into. But tonight there's so many other things I'd like to get into, and I don't want to run out of time, which invariably I wind up doing. Suffice to say, I made it back. I was let into the country. Thank you. Thank you, customs people, for allowing me to come back into my own country. I really appreciate that. And there are all sorts of other things going on that need to be focused on. And hopefully with any luck, we'll be able to take phone calls at, I'll write down the number, 631-632-9872. That's 631-632-WUSB. That is our phone number. Don't tell me the stream's down.
No.
No, okay.
As in my machine.
Ah, okay, good.
Sorry.
It's always something that happens during the show. The stream goes down. But it's not down. It's up. That's good to know. At least I assume it's up. Okay, good. Thank you. It's good to know. Let's see. What's going on? Well, of course, the whole world's gone crazy again. All right, yeah, let's get into this. Let's get right into this. You know, I knew when I was over there, when I was over in Europe, that the whole Israeli thing was going to go nuts. It was obvious that it was going to happen because Hamas just kept sending these rockets over and provoking, trying to provoke Israel into some kind of a response, and they got it. They got a response. Incredible. I was discussing this with a bunch of people, how there are those that simply want war, those who simply don't know anything but war, and they cannot function in society without it. And a lot of people in that region really need war to survive. It's sad, because all the people wind up paying the price as a result. So it was pretty obvious that there was going to be some kind of a response, and something would be done, and it would happen over the holidays, because for some reason that's when things like that tend to happen. And yes, we saw Israel start bombing the crap out of the Gaza Strip and Hamas, and I gotta say, you know, I'm no fan of Hamas, for sure, and I think we'd be far better off had they never existed in the first place. And if there was some way to make them not exist now, that would certainly be great as well. But that said, the response has done more to strengthen them than anything else. And, you know, I have to wonder, the biggest enemy to Israel, yes, the biggest enemy to Israel is Israel itself, because of the things they do that make the rest of the world hate them so much. And this is one of them. This is one of these things where they simply go crazy bombing innocent civilians, killing hundreds of people, but you know what? That's okay, because they were throwing these rockets at us and making us be a little bit afraid that we were going to get hit by one of them. And that's the thing, you know. Very few people have died from these rockets, and that's not justifying your rockets in any sense. I'm just saying that these things are not very effective, other than to get people angry and make them afraid, which I guess is the point. But when you go back and you simply wipe out a population in response to that, you're not going to win any sympathy. You're simply going to make the other side actually look justified, which, you know, I would have thought was impossible. I would think it was impossible for a bunch of goons to basically terrorize people by lobbing rockets randomly, you know. I would think that that would be unjustifiable. But Israel has come forward and made it justifiable. They've basically imposed such terror on people and made things so horrible that more people now are saying, yeah, I'll send you a rocket to send to Israel. Go right ahead, you know. You guys deserve it. And that's really bad decision-making, I think. Very bad decision-making and almost unbelievable. Now, today, Israel managed to bomb a school. Now, you know, I've been reading all of this in the Western media. The Western media is hopelessly biased, by the way, because, well, it's not really their fault. They're not allowed into the occupied territories to see what's going on, so they can only report on what's happening in the areas that they're allowed to go in. And so everybody goes and they take a tour of a crater where a Hamas rocket hit the ground. Didn't kill anybody, but look at that hole. Now, if that had been my head, that would have hurt a lot, and that would have killed me. That would have killed all kinds of people had they been standing right there, but they weren't. But now we have this big crater to show you. That's the face of terror. Okay, you know, that's great. That's wonderful. But you can't see the other face of terror on the other side. You know? The irony of seeing all these people running for cover, screaming, mourning their dead, blood everywhere, bodies in the street, and to put a caption over that saying that this is Israel fighting terror. You know, it's just, it's absurd. There's no other word for it. It's the height of absurdity. And it's self-defeating. It is totally self-defeating. What do you think is going to happen in 10, 20 years when the kids that witness this grow up? You know? And maybe you're seeing today, in what seem like irrational acts of lobbing rockets over the border to an enemy you can't even see. Well, maybe those irrational actions have been caused by what happened 10 or 20 years ago. It's entirely possible. We can't claim that we don't understand this. We can't say that these people are reasonable and these people are not reasonable. Because everything has a reason. Everything is shaped and formed through a series of events. We're seeing that now. We're seeing it in the past. And we can expect it in the future. What happened on September 11th? Perfectly understandable. Not justified, but understandable. A lot of people saw it coming. And more things will come in the future. You can't invade a country and massacre people and expect there not to be a reaction at some point. And while those might seem like harsh, strong words, you have to look at it from the perspective of the people who live there. Okay, so today a school got bombed by Israeli forces. Now, look at the way the Western media chooses to cover this. The headline is, Hamas mortars prompted attack near UN school. The school is run by the UN. So the headline isn't that a school was bombed. The headline is, well, the school was bombed because the other side did something. I mean, come on, that's just silly. That's insane. That just completely takes away from the story itself. Because you could say just as easily that the mortars that the Hamas is firing have been prompted by something Israel did in the past. You know, it's all a question of who did what first. You know? You could say this is completely unjustified. Oh, but it is justified because 10 years ago they massacred our people in this particular spot and now we're simply responding to that. Oh, but that massacre was a response to the the bombings, the suicide bombings that were taking place 5 years before that. You know, you can just keep going back in time and studying history, but being enslaved by it at the same time. If you start off at a particular point in time, like now, and say the next person that does something, you're in the wrong. Might simplify things a bit. It'll make a lot of people angry because they'll feel that their past grievances aren't being addressed. But at some point, there are so many past grievances that it doesn't make any difference anymore. So, yeah, three artillery shells, believed to have been fired by Israeli forces, struck near the perimeter of a UN school in northern Gaza, killing at least 30 people, wounding 55. Now, how does that help anybody? How does that help the Israeli cause? It most certainly does not. It does more harm than anything. And if you look at the other side, I've seen headlines saying that Hamas mortars have been targeting schools in Israel. They haven't hit a single one. They haven't killed a single person in a school. But they really want to. They're aiming for them. And these people are such cowards that they simply fire their mortars and don't care who they hit. Well, you know what? Let's make it easier for them, all right? Let's tell them exactly where the politicians and the leaders are. Okay, let's move all the leaders' houses close to the border. Then they won't fire at civilians, right? I mean, the only reason they're firing at civilians is because they don't have the capabilities of actually doing something militarily. They don't have an air force. You know, they don't have a way of actually reaching the people that they're truly upset at. See, it's okay for our leaders and our people to go around saying that, we should be striking and killing all the Hamas leaders and people who support them. It's okay to say that. But flip it around a little bit and say, well, okay then, it's okay to kill the leaders of Israel. It's okay to kill the politicians there and the people who support them. And the reason why we think that's a bad thing to say is because we're familiar with their side. You know, we feel some kind of compassion. We feel nothing for the other side. But at the same time, we know nothing about the other side. We're not allowed into the other side. We have no press coverage of the other side. We have no idea what's going on over there. All we know is that they're the bad people. And it doesn't matter if you wipe out an entire community if you get a couple of the bad people. But if you use that same logic and change a couple of the facts around, it seems so barbaric, so horrible. And rarely are things that black and white. Far more civilians than Hamas fighters are arriving for treatment of war wounds at Gaza's main hospital as Israel's military incursion into the territory continues. That's according to doctors over there. When the Israeli airstrikes began more than a week ago, the first casualties at Shifa Hospital were fighters in military uniform. But after that day and until this day, we didn't receive any men from the resistance or anyone in the military. All of them were civilians. Eric Foss, a Norwegian doctor volunteering at Shifa, said he has seen more women and children among the casualties Monday than on any other day since the Israeli offensive began on December 27th. Most of the wounded men he is seeing are civilians as well. So that's what's coming out of this. That's what this is going to be remembered. That's basically how the world will see this. That's how the world is seeing this. And the thing that really upset me, the thing that upset me more than anything, I think, was seeing the leader of the UN, Secretary General, saying that right now what we need more than anything is a ceasefire. A ceasefire has to take place immediately. And within a couple of hours, Israel just sent more bombs into Gaza. And seriously, I think they should have been kicked out of the UN at that point. Because to show such disrespect, to simply ignore that kind of a plea from the Secretary General, shows that they don't care. They don't care what the rest of the world says. They don't care about anything other than their own interests. And, you know, while we can sympathize to a degree, That's just not good enough. Now, Gaza is not part of the UN, obviously, so they don't have to worry about the same things, but at the same time, they don't have the same capabilities. Now, if they were to start firing more rockets at that point, then yeah, okay. Unwarranted though the escalation might be, at least you might be able to understand it. But to simply ignore what somebody in that position is saying, as if they don't exist, that to me just seems unforgivable. And also the fact that the UN has no actual teeth, that's frustrating as well. Would be nice to see some actual action taken. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg expressed solidarity with Israelis threatened by Hamas rockets on Sunday in a day-long trip to Israel that included visits to two towns targeted by the Islamic militant movement. During the visit to the embattled town of Sderot, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, Bloomberg and his party, which included Representative Gary Ackerman, a New York Democrat, were briefly hustled to a bomb shelter when a missile warning went off. Great press opportunity there. Great photo shoots. A telephone interview with the Associated Press, Bloomberg said he fully understood Israel's actions. You should rest assured, if anyone in New York was being threatened, my instruction to the NYPD would be to use all the resources at their disposal to protect civilians. Well then, you're saying if somebody in New Jersey started firing rockets at random targets in Manhattan, now, that would be a big deal for sure. That would be on the 11 o'clock news and everything. But your response to that would be basically to carpet bomb New Jersey. To basically just wipe out the entire state or anybody that got in your way. Not to look for the people that did it. Not to actually launch some kind of an investigation and try and work this out without killing any innocent people. You wouldn't care about that. You'd kill all the innocent people you possibly could because you knew if you did that, you'd eventually get the bad guys. That's your way of dealing with it. Interesting. Interesting to know that. Bloomberg blamed the current situation entirely on the militant Hamas movement. You know, and that might even be true. That might even be 100% true, because it sure seemed like they were trying to provoke Israel into some kind of a response. Like I said, there are people that exist for war. There are people that simply want war and can't find any way to exist in a peaceful setting. And there are certainly elements over there that that want Israel destroyed, that want to be in a perpetual state of war. So that's not inconceivable. But there's more to the story. There's more to the story beyond that, because conditions over there were simply atrocious. There were all kinds of barricades, and these people didn't have electricity or water or all kinds of things for a long period of time. So it's entirely possible that sending a rocket every now and then was justifiable, if you believe that kind of a thing. I don't think it was, personally. I don't think there's any justification for doing that, but certainly it wasn't a great situation. It really depends who you talk to. But one thing I think most people can agree on is that this this current operation is just barbaric and insane. And in the end, it's going to go pretty much like it went in Lebanon a couple of years ago, when Israel tried the same thing against Hezbollah. Basically, they become strengthened as a result. And keep in mind, Hamas was elected. They were elected by the people who live there, overwhelmingly. Why? Because of things like this. Simply makes people all the angrier and all the more reactionary. All right, so basically Bloomberg said all Hamas has to do is stop sending rockets over to kill people and agree on the accords that were negotiated earlier, and come to an agreement that is verifiable, durable, and effective to stop people from being killed. It's that easy, huh? Okay, if it's that easy, if it really is that easy, then let's do that. Of course, Israel has expressed no interest in doing anything like that, but why don't we just put that forward as a proposal, all right? Everybody stop right now. Of course, that sounds like a ceasefire, which Israel doesn't want, but let's just say that Israel, Hamas, stop. Right now, stop. The next one of you that fires anything Yeah, you're the ones that are wrong. How about that? Make it nice and simple. It's funny how we can never get to that stage. Okay. Interesting piece from the Daily Mail over in the UK. Headline being, Israeli troops close in on Gaza City as Hamas vows to fight on in the name of God. Of course, they're all doing everything in the name of God. They go into detail about the strikes and the large amounts of civilians being killed. But there's one part of the story which I found very interesting. There is speculation that Israel might have been using banned white phosphorus shells in its assaults. As troops and tanks advanced yesterday, artillery shells were fired that caused a screen of dense white smoke. Blobs of phosphorus cause severe burns to anyone caught under them, and their use as a military weapon is forbidden in civilian areas under the Geneva Treaty of 1980. Israel admitted to using the weapon during its 2006 military operations against Hezbollah in Lebanon, but has denied using the controversial weapon in Gaza. Now, hang on a second. What I just read here, they don't go back to that at all. Nobody goes back to that. Israel admitted using that weapon in 2006, a weapon that was banned in 1980. And what, they just got away with it? Nobody did anything about this? They can just use banned weapons with impunity and that's okay. Let's move on. Yeah, that's insane. Either this story is completely wrong or somebody's closing their eyes to a lot of injustice. Okay, enough about that. Felt I had to touch upon it just a little bit. Hopefully some of it made sense, because I am still in the throes of delirium here. Speaking of airplanes and stupidity and things like that, you hear about this story? This is incredible. A Muslim family was removed from an airliner on Thursday after passengers became concerned about their conversation. And this Muslim family said that AirTran refused to rebook them even after FBI investigators cleared them of wrongdoing. Atif Irfan said federal authorities removed 8 members of his extended family and a friend after passengers heard them discussing the safest place to sit and misconstrued the nature of the conversation. Irfan, a U.S. citizen and tax attorney, said he was impressed with the professionalism of the FBI agents who questioned him, but said he felt mistreated when the airline refused to book the family for a later flight. AirTran Airways on Thursday said they acted properly and that the family was offered full refunds and they can fly with AirTran again. AirTran Airways complied with all TSA, law enforcement, and Homeland Security directives and had no discretion in the matter, the company said in a prepared statement. Family members said FBI agents tried to work it out with the airline, but to no avail. The FBI agents actually cleared our names, said Inyat Sahin, who's Irfan's sister-in-law. They went on our behalf and spoke to the airlines and said, there is no suspicious activity here. They are clear. Please get them on a flight so they can go on their vacation. And they still refused. The airline told us that we can't fly their airline. Now, basically, the conversation took place as they were walking through the plane trying to find their seats. The conversation was just about where the safest place in the airplane is. We were discussing whether it was safest to sit near the wing or the engine or the back or the front, but that's it. We didn't say anything else that would raise any suspicion. The conversation did not contain the word bomb, explosion, terror, or other words that might have aroused suspicion. When we turned around, I noticed a couple of girls kind of snapped their heads, said Sabia Ajaz, Irfan's wife. I kind of thought to myself, oh, you know, maybe they're going to say something. Didn't occur to me that they were going to make it such a big issue. Sometime later, while the plane was still at the gate, an FBI agent boarded the plane and asked Irfan and his wife to leave the plane. The rest of the family was removed 15 or 20 minutes later, along with a family friend, who is Abdul Aziz, a Library of Congress attorney and family friend, who was coincidentally taking the same flight and had been seen talking to the family. I love it when the people that are drawn into this are so respectable and well-spoken that it makes the people responsible look like such idiots. I just love that. Anyway, after the FBI interviewed family members, it released them. AirTrans spokesman Tad Hutchison said the incident began when some passengers reported hearing suspicious remarks by a woman and alerted flight attendants. Two federal air marshals who were on board the flight, two federal air marshals, notified law enforcement about the security-related issue. After the family and Aziz were taken for questioning, the remaining 95 passengers were taken off the plane and rescreened, along with the crew and the baggage. Irfan said he believes his family is owed an apology. Really, at the end of the day, we're not out here looking for money. I'm an attorney. I know how the court system works. We're basically looking for someone to say, we're apologizing for treating you as second-class citizens. We are proud Americans. We know, we decided to have our children and raise them here. We can very easily go anywhere we want in the world, but you know we love it here, and we're not going to go away no matter what. Well, as it turns out, despite being so defiant, eventually, after the publicity started being spread around, AirTran apologized to the family. This goes to show that takes a little bit of pressure, but eventually they'll say the magic words. We regret that the issue escalated to the heightened security level it did, but we trust everyone understands that the security and the safety of our passengers is paramount. You know what? I'd like to report the idiots who feel compelled when somebody who is Arab in nature says anything that could in any way be construed however you wish it to be construed, and just about any comment made by anybody can be construed that way. I'd like to report those people for being too stupid to fly. You don't know what's going to happen to them in a crisis situation or even in a normal situation. Who knows what they're going to do next? I'd like to report people for being stupid. Have them removed. Have them rescreened. That would be nice. My God. Okay, what else is going on? This is incredible. A New Year's Day shooting in which a subway police officer fired a deadly shot into the back of an unarmed man has the San Francisco Bay Area demanding answers as authorities appeal for patience. Unreal. Bay Area Rapid Transit spokesman Linton Johnson says that the officer is presumed innocent and describes him as devastated. Oh, that's too bad. He's devastated. Well, isn't that punishment enough? Shot the guy in the back. Must be devastating to do that. An attorney for the victim had... Well, wait, which victim are you talking about? Are you talking about the guy who's dead, or are you talking about the officer who is devastated? He's a victim, too. I mean, come on. Yeah, well, an attorney supposedly for the dead victim has called the shooting barbarous and says he plans to file a $25 million lawsuit. According to TV station KTVU, two videos were obtained of the incident and its prelude. One video, which reportedly came from a train passenger who wished not to be identified lest he also be shot in the back, shows three young men against a wall in the crowded Fruitvale station. Karina Vargas, who also provided a video to the TV station, said the men had been pulled from the train car in front of hers. Some of the young men were handcuffed, but not 22-year-old Oscar Grant. The video from the anonymous passenger shows Grant seated on the floor with his back against the wall. Grant holds up his hands, appearing to plead with police. The interaction is not audible. Seconds later, police put Grant face down on the ground. Grant appears to struggle. One of the officers kneels on Grant as another officer stands up, tugs at his gun, unholsters it, and fires a shot into Grant's back. Grant, who has a 4-year-old daughter, died 7 hours later. You know, there's a lot more in this story, but I think, you know, that description of the video of what was actually captured... What more do you need? Yet the guy who did this remains anonymous, remains free, and is presumed innocent because he's devastated. And that's the double standard we have to live by. Simply incredible. All right, well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I've really rambled on this hour, haven't I? But that's part of the delirium kicking in. You just aren't aware of time going by. I'm aware, though, of the sadness surrounding this place as we say goodbye to Sam Taylor, one of our own, who hosted a radio show here, was a great musician, world-renowned, somebody who had songs recorded by Elvis Presley, all kinds of musical background involved in this particular person's life, and we were very fortunate to have him be a part of our family here at WUSB. And I have a feeling we're going to be hearing a lot of blues over the next couple of weeks here at this place. And I'd like to leave us tonight with a song that appeared on the WUSB CD called Not Just Another Pretty Face. I think you might be able to find that on our website. If not, I'm sure you'll be able to soon. Great series of recordings by WUSB staff members, and Sam being one of the most talented here. Sam passed away yesterday at the age of 74. And I'm sure you'll be hearing all kinds of tributes to him in the days and weeks and months ahead. And again, there's a show tomorrow night at Barbecues in Patchogue that will be in his honor. For Off the Wall, it's Manuel Goldstein. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and for putting up with me. Write to us, otw@2600.com. I'm sorry we didn't get to the phones tonight, but we will next week. And that's a promise. All right, let's go out with Sam Taylor. Good night.
The ones that come in. Yeah, the late, great Sam Taylor, right where he belongs, right here on WUSB in Stony Brook.